And now our first case, to begin with, welcome everyone today. Our first case this morning is State v. Harold W. Baker. Mr. Riley, good morning to you. You may approach.
Chief Justice, members of the court, Thomas Riley, Public Defender's Office, Douglas County. On behalf of the defendant, Harold Baker, who appeals his conviction for two counts of first-degree murder, two counts of attempted murder, four counts of use of firearms, for which he was sentenced to life plus. The case arises out of a shooting that occurred, on December 21st, 2014, in a parking lot of an apartment complex. The four shooting victims were seated in a parked vehicle, and the shooter unloaded a semi-automatic into the car, killing two of the occupants and wounding the other two. After the shooting occurred, police arrived on the scene, did damage. It was in an apartment complex, and the officers went apartment to apartment, and the defendant, Mr. Baker, was in one of the apartments at the time, not as a resident, but as a visitor. And the apartment was pretty vacant. It was a bed. There was a cursory search of the apartment at that time. As that was going on, police determined that there was some surveillance video that they were able to obtain. They weren't able to actually get a very good view of it, but it couldn't operate it too well, so they brought down a station. And it turns out that the parking lot video was able to capture the shooting on video. It's not sufficient enough to identify facial features, etc., but you could certainly see that the shooter was basically behind a parked car that was within maybe 10, 12, 14 feet of the victim's car. And you can see a long gun and the numerous shots being fired. Shooter disappears from the scene. You can't really tell where the shooter goes. There's no arrest immediately. And several weeks later, there was a shooting of a woman's house, and she called the police. They found similar shell casings that were found at the scene of the homicide at the woman's house, and she indicated that her boyfriend, the defendant, had broken off, and he was jealous, and said he was going to shoot the house up and shot for fire. As a result, they got a search warrant for the defendant's residence. And I want to say this was maybe 2 or 3 weeks after the homicide, but within 1 or 2 days of the shooting at the girlfriend's house. And the subject of the appeal is basically two fronts. The validity of the search, which resulted in a search of the defendant's room, wherein a firearm that was connected to the casings was located, cases of the homicide, and from the other side located, and some clothing that is somewhat distinctive that at least the police and state would allege is similar to that which was worn by the shooter as to be observed in the video. We're challenging the validity of the search warrant on particularity grounds. This has been a obviously an issue that the court has been wrestling with on a number of recent cases. And the other issue that we're raising is the admissibility of statements made not by the there's a jail phone call made shortly after the defendant was arrested wherein he called actually the woman whose house he was allegedly had shot up. And while I can't contest that the statements of the defendant are not admissible, it's our position that the statements made by female Cheyenne Clark during the conversation are not admissible basically under 403 because the state said that they were not offered for the truth of the matter asserted in her statements. So I'll address those two issues in that order.
Were there any other weapons found pursuant to the search warrant?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Were there any other weapons found pursuant to the search warrant?
No.
And this is a caliber of 223 caliber, close to that?
Yes.
And that would be the same caliber as an M15 or an M16, wouldn't it?
It's the same caliber. It's the same
And there also are bolt-action rifles that fire that caliber.
Well, there's no evidence in the record on that.
Well, you know what a 223 is.
I'm not a firearm enthusiast, I must confess.
Okay.
I know.
But you're saying that they had to limit their search to just looking for a 223 caliber weapon?
That's what I'm saying, because they had casings. They're the only casings found at the scene were 223. The court relied, and our position is, if you look at, well, when you observed the affidavit and the search warrant, basically it's a blanket for any and all firearms. And furthermore, it asks for unidentified clothing, which they do say has some certain markings on the back, and so I'll grant that, but I still don't think that's particular enough. And also, venue items, which I've lost that argument with you before, so I won't go there. But also,
like an envelope with a with the name of the addressee on the envelope, is that your venue item?
That's what they're looking for. But I've argued that makes every search warrant a blanket search, and the court has told me that they don't agree. You don't agree, and so I'll accept that for the time being. And the last thing they put in their affidavit in the search the magistrate allowed was again any and all evidence, and then they add all electronics. And the court, in an order, they did seize some cell phone. The court granted the motion to suppress on the cell phone, but denied it on the clothing that was taken and the long semi-automatic rifle. The court relied heavily on State versus Avery Tyler, which I'm familiar with. It was a case that I handled. And in that case, I made a similar argument as I'm making this morning. The weapon in that homicide was also somewhat distinctive. It wasn't like a 22 or a 32. It was a more distinctive weapon. And the search warrant was similar in language, any and all firearms and whatever other accoutrements. And this court said that in certain circumstances that may be sufficient, even though it's a broad terminology.
Did your client have a prior felony conviction?
Yes.
So
No.
Okay.
No, did not.
All right, that's right.
I lost my train of thought.
Well,
sorry.
With respect to the particularity.
Yes.
Of the casings or whatever calibers would be suited to the arms you see.
Right. I was talking about the Tyler case.
Okay.
And this court said that in certain circumstances, even the broad description of any and all firearms may be sufficient. And the court relied in part on the fact that at trial, the firearms expert called by the state said that there were any variety of firearms that could be could have fired the caliber weapon casing that were found at the scene. So somewhere over 20. As a result, particularity was not violated because of that. In this case, and I was aware of that, the report's ruling, obviously, and in this case, the state did not present any such evidence. And I think this court relied rather heavily on the fact that there were any, 20-plus weapons that could have fired the casings, which justified the more broad terminology used in the search application and the search warrant.
Prior to the issuance of the warrant or the affidavit in support of the warrant, the nature of the casings was known to the authorities?
Yeah, they were found on the day of the homicide.
And they're
in that
category only?
Yes.
Thank you.
That's all. There were just 223. That's it. And there was no evidence that 27 different firearms or two different types of firearms or whatever would have been capable of discharging those casings. So what I'm trying to do is make the distinction between what you said, Tyler, and that the trial court's reliance on Tyler is misguided because it's distinguishable on those grounds.
Do we have any guidance from federal courts or other state courts about this kind of language in search warrants?
I haven't seen cases that deal directly with any and all the terminology like any and all evidence. I haven't seen much that there's always. I know this court has recognized, as have other courts, talked about severability of a search warrant, that some parts of it may be not satisfy the particularity requirement of it. If there's more specific language on certain aspects, that it may suffice. But I confess that the cases I'm relying on were the court cases from this court and from the cases that this court has relied on. That's why I'm trying to make the distinction. The only other thing I'd like to add...
Does particularity have to have something to do with the ultimate crime charged?
Well, in State versus Henderson, which was, I think it predated Tyler. If not, it's right around in the same time period, and that was another case where there was a search of a cell phone, and this court in Henderson said that the fact that probable cause exists does not necessarily determine the scope of the search, and the probable cause has to justify the scope of the search. And the way I'm interpreting the court's statement on that is that while there may be probable cause to search for an item or a certain item, if the search warrant is so broad in its terminology and allows such a broad discretion, which is what courts have all said, the kind of the magic words are, you're not supposed to let the police have any really discretion about what they should be looking for. It's supposed to be particular enough. And in Henderson, the court said that PC presence answers part of the question, and then particularity is a separate issue. And
from the officer's standpoint, they obviously know the particulars.
And
all guns.
Yeah, but they don't convey that in the language of the search warrant. They don't limit it to that. I acknowledge, Mr. Chief Justice, that in the affidavit there's a reference to that. Absolutely there is. But the search warrant itself and what the application requests goes far beyond that. And I'm suggesting to the court that therein lies the distinction that must be made.
Mr. Riley,
yes.
What was actually seized pursuant to the warrant was within the scope of the particularity that you would have preferred the search warrant to be limited to, wasn't it? We're not talking about they were searching for any and all guns and found
10 different guns
related to other crimes.
That's true. I mean, that's true. They took the only gun they found. And it so happens that it was the weapon that was used in this case. They took clothing. They took more clothing than just what was put into evidence. The inventory and receipt should be in the record. And they took more than that. And of course, they took every electronic device they could get their hands on. And it's my belief that at some point, there has to be a line drawn that says, you can't just go in there and say, any items of evidence that we think might be valuable, we can just take whatever we want. And then hope that a couple of these things are connected to the case and that'll justify everything else. I think it's the tail wagging the dog a little bit in that scenario. And that's my position on it.
But the everything else that you were concerned about in this instance was suppressed.
No, well, the everything else was suppressed, but the warrant still allowed, I think that the warrant has to stand on its own too. That's where I'm coming from, is that the fact that they strike it rich, so to speak, doesn't necessarily mean that the warrant was okay. Just because, well, you know, yeah, we have the authority to take any gun that we want, and we found one, and bingo, we got the right one. I mean, they should have said in the affidavit a long gun. I mean, you can see it wasn't a pistol in the video, but so why don't they limit it to that? Because they want to go fishing. And, you know, obviously, they don't know for sure if this is the perpetrator, but maybe we'll find something else. That's where I think the line is crossed.
But this isn't a something else case. In other words, they didn't find something else other than the things that were suppressed.
They didn't find anything else for which they charged him.
Right.
That's correct. Some of it was suppressed.
Is the crucial issue here the gun?
I'm sorry?
Is the crucial issue here for you the gun?
The gun and the clothing.
Okay.
I'm sorry, the jacket in particular?
There's a Memphis Chicks jacket that was found in the defendant's room, and it has...
That was one of the things that was used to identify the victim or the defendant in the picture, wasn't it? Wearing a Memphis Chicks.
No, it wasn't. You can't see that it's a Memphis Chicks. You can see.
You can see the color of it, can't you?
You can see there's a design on the back.
And it's blue.
And there's a design on the front chest. You can see that for sure.
Can you tell the color of it from the video?
No.
Okay.
And in fairness, there's also a video in the case that precedes the shooting where they're seeing people walking in and out of the residence, and in that, it's a much clearer view of the clothing. It's still not perfect, don't get me wrong, but I mean, let's face it, it's a apartment complex surveillance tape that's, you know, not necessarily you can put there by police for hope, in hopes of detecting crime.
How would they have been more particular with the jacket or the clothing, describing it in the affidavit?
Because the if they could have had the witness, the ex-girlfriend, because she eventually testified about that, and they certainly had the opportunity to talk to her. And they did at some point. And she said it was a Memphis Chicks jacket, and she looked at it when they seized it and said, yeah, that's when he wore it.
So before the affidavit is prepared, they should interview that witness?
They could have. Okay. At least on that topic. I wanted to get to the, I'm running out of time, but I wanted to get to the jail phone call. I guess in the short, brief time I have left, what I'm asking the court to do is compare a similar analysis to this case as you did in State versus Rocha. I think that's how you pronounce it, R-O-C-H-A, which was a police interrogation audio or videotape that was put into evidence. And the question was whether or not the statements made by the police officer, you're a liar, you're not telling me the truth, were admissible. And the court said, I think I'm quoting the court, this is a close call, but made a sufficient limiting instruction to get over the 403 hump. And the state seems to be alleging that I'm complaining about the limiting instruction. All I'm doing, I'm not. I didn't object to it because there has to be some limiting instruction. What I was making the analogy to is in Roca, the court made a point of citing, not only citing the instruction in that case, but in previous cases, and where they specifically said what it was admissible for, and not just said, well, it's to put the statement in context. They said, this is a police tactic used for interrogation. It is not necessarily, it is not to be considered for the truth of the matter, but that's an opinion of the officer.
I remember, weren't there certain parts of Roca in which the police officer's statements were not allowed?
In?
Roca.
Yes. Yes, but
because he was actually testifying to the truth by saying you're lying.
But that's
but we don't have that here.
Yes, so you have similar statements. You got the girl on the other line saying, well, you know, it was them or you had to do this.
Yes, he initiates the call.
He made the call.
He made the call. She's not working for the state in any
capacity. No. But I'm just saying that. We're gonna be seeing lots of cases like this coming. With text messaging, with Facebook going back and forth, with phone calls like this, where clearly, if you can establish that the defendant is one of the declarants, you can't do a heck of a lot about it because it's not hearsay.
So your solution to this, as I understand it, is you just play the defendant's statements and you don't play anything of what the other person in
not
the conversation.
I think you have to do it on a case-by-case basis, because in Roca, the court said, let's apply the rules that we have now. And because of the facts of that case, it was doable. In some cases, it may not be. And I'm saying that one way of doing it is to have an officer testify, or have the person on the end of the other end of the phone testify to what was said. And if there's, in this case, for instance, if there was statement that she made that are inconsistent or that she is untrue, is exaggerating or not being accurate, we could play that portion of the tape in for purposes of impeachment. I mean, I think there have to be different ways to fashion this solution to this, but we can't just be allowing everything to come in a phone call and say, just disregard what the other person is saying because it's not offered for the truth.
So the larger proposition is, In your view, this should be severable, and then you need a mechanism to
that's right. I mean,
do
there
it.
May be certain
live testimony by one of the declarants, or use it as a memory refreshing thing, or an
sure.
impeachment thing,
sure.
or something
yeah.
like that. Is that
yeah.
close?
In text messages, it might be a little easier to redact things. Okay. In you know, phone calls where they're, you know, going back and forth, redacting it seems to be, to me, to be a very imperfect way of doing it, because it doesn't allow for the context. But the person on the other end of the phone can say, he told me this, he told me that. And it's not, you know, her saying, I know you did this. The cops know you did this. That's the kind of stuff that she's talking about in the phone call. He doesn't know anything until she tells him. Thank you for letting me bring that issue up. I appreciate you going over. Thank you
very much. Mr. Wiss, good morning to you.
Good morning. Police Department, U.S. Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the state of Nebraska. As far as the validity of the search warrant for Baker's residence, statement out of warrant, I'll start by noting that when evidence is obtained pursuant to the defendant's burden to establish the warrant is invalid. Submit Baker's not met that burden in this case. Set forth in our brief, search warrant affidavit established probable cause to search residence for relating to the shootings in question. The warrant was sufficient in particular with the evidence that police were authorized to seize. I mean, there was nothing improper with the warrant. As far as Baker's assertion that it was overly broad because it authorized police to search for any and all firearms, we disagree. The court upheld the search warrant's use of such language in State v. Tyler, noting that generic and broad language of this nature is acceptable. It was acceptable under the circumstances. And submit the same rules from here, given that when they obtained the warrant, they didn't know precisely what type of gun was in the shooting. fact, they found two 223 casings at both scenes and had video surveillance of the pawn gun being used. Doesn't mean they were able to definitively pinpoint the type of gun used, especially when that's step forth in our brief. Some guns, such as the one found here.
I beg your pardon. So there's no dispute that the authorities knew the caliber of the casing prior to the affidavit?
Correct. There's no dispute as to that, Your Honor. But that doesn't mean that knowing the caliber of casings is going to automatically tell you the caliber of weapon. That's, I think, precisely the problem with the appellant's argument. There are guns such as this gun that can shoot .223 ammo as well as other calibers of ammo. So just knowing the .223 casings found doesn't tell you that it's a gun. So I don't see why, as in Tyler, I would submit that we're not limited to searching for a single type of firearm, and that the warrant in this case, just as in Tyler, was particular.
Is it significant in our analysis, as I was quizzing your opposing counsel, that in this instance they didn't find anything other than what the particular description that your opponent would prefer? Had that been used, they would have found exactly the same thing. Is that significant in any way?
It absolutely is if you find yourself doing a good faith analysis, and that's basically what this court did in Henderson, with that exact rationale. But, well, okay, even though it was a bit overbroad here, as far as what they went in and looked for, it comported with their investigation as far as what they seized. It was consistent with their investigation as far as what they admitted to trial. It was consistent with their investigation. And they didn't go off and find something else in left field that was completely unrelated to the use against the defendant. So I think in that regard, I don't think we need to get to a good faith analysis here. But in the event that we do, this court goes that it's been that good faith analysis.
Well, suppose you found 10 shotguns plus a weapon that might be close to this caliber of .223, and you go to trial, the defendant can object to the offering of evidence of the shotguns at that time and move to suppress that, can't he?
There would certainly be...
Not relevant to the case.
A better argument. Yeah, I mean, if that goes beyond what they were authorized to search for,
well, and I mean, they were authorized to search for any and all firearms, and they collect 10 shotguns in addition to a .223. You're not going to make much of a case by offering the 10 shotguns as evidence, are you? Are you even going to get that in?
I'm not sure it's safe to see. I guess perhaps if the person's a felon, they're charging.
Well, yeah, but that's not the case. But
no, it's not.
What they found in addition to that weapon is not relevant, is it?
Well, I mean, they didn't find any other guns.
No, I'm just giving you a hypothetical.
They arguably would have been. Now, if they found another gun that might be a .223, I mean...
Well, sure, that's different.
But they're also seeking all ammunition, right? Was other ammunition found? What ammunition was found, is my question.
There was a magazine, I don't recall if it was in the gun or not, but there was a magazine with live rounds in it, so they did find it.
If we are concerned that magistrates are not being sufficiently particular, how do we convey that message?
Well, as you just reiterate the standard, and I guess you'd have to feel like recent cases have not been particular as they should have been. You would note that and say that the purpose of further particularity would be advisable in that effect.
Or you could suppress the evidence.
Well, you'd have to have a Fourth Amendment violation.
Well, historically, the exclusionary rule is how you get people's attention.
Correct. Right. Exclusionary rule applies when you have unlawful or improper police conduct. I don't see anything improper here whatsoever, especially when Tyler upheld language virtually identical. That's why law enforcement would be given the situation thinking this is problematic.
Well, I think the concern that I see is they find a handgun, 9mm, in this search warrant. They trace that back to another homicide and then try to use that evidence in the next homicide. So what's the concern there?
Well, I understand that, sir. I mean, I think it's, as in any Fourth Amendment case, it's case by case in terms of what we're going to do in the event that happens. I don't think I can give you the categorical answer. How we address it, it may be a problem, it may not, or at least we may have good faith in that situation. I mean, I understand the concern.
It's easy for the particularity requirement to be dumbed down, to use the vernacular, over time. And that's the basis for my question. If we, and it's not the police in this instance. Police, the affidavit spoke fairly definitively about what they were wanting. I guess it's my concern is the magistrates and their exercising the authority that they should be exercising to make sure that the particularity requirement is enforced, and I'm interested in your view about that.
Well, I mean, they certainly have that duty. I can't dispute that. But when I look at situations such as this, I guess trying to put myself in the magistrate's or judge's shoes for the important stage, I don't know how particular I would require police to be here, especially I Mr. Riley, I'm not a gun enthusiast, but I do know that 223 casings are not limited to 223 weapons, and so how particular am I going to require them to be in terms of what they're looking for and limiting the scope of that? There could very well be legitimate evidence out there that they're searching for and can legitimately seize, and so to get too particular unnecessarily would cut law enforcement off the legs.
Would it matter on a case-by-case basis? Because Mr. Riley, and I think the state agrees, that what was known prior to the affidavit is 223 casings are being found at one or two locations, at least with respect to the case at hand, right?
Yes.
Right. So could the affidavit be more particular with respect to ammunition rather than the guns themselves? What if they went in, and I'm not a gun enthusiast either, but they found birdshot, we'd be like, what? You know, so would it have to be a little more particular if you have some knowledge of the underlying facts?
I suppose it could, although I don't know, just finding all the casings, granted they didn't find casings from other ammunition, but say you just find certain casings, or what if you have a case where there legitimately could be more than one type of casing, you're just not sure, and limiting yourself to that one type of case, and again, you're cutting yourself off the legs, and there might be relevant evidence, additional relevant evidence out there that you don't want to preclude yourself from obtaining that may in fact be relevant to your investigation. I don't really have any basis to say that that's they were thinking there was other ammunition here. I guess to answer your question, yes, but I mean, they could. I don't think that means
Counsel, didn't the video show a long gun?
It did.
And so wouldn't it have been more particular if the warrant had authorized searching for any and all long guns instead of any and all guns?
Well, my issue with that is that as the evidence established, the suppression of firearms, particular weapons in particular, are not limited to just long guns. And we don't have video of surveillance of what we're seeing
the second shooting.
I don't see any basis for it sold on this.
Can't you just say weapons capable of shooting a projectile similar with the .223 caliber or something of that nature?
I suppose that would be if you were...
If you know that's the only caliber of weapon or...
Yes, but would an officer be able to know that when they're doing this?
I don't know, and that's one question I have. Even if you get that statement and say, okay, it has to be limited to weapons capable of firing .223.
Counsel,
I don't know any difference between 5x6. I mean, there's a lot of weapons out there that look very similar.
Can the trial court save the validity of the warrant by limiting the introduction of evidence that relates directly to the crime and excluding other evidence that has no relationship to the crime?
Sure. Yeah, I mean,
can save the validity of the evidence obtained by excluding other evidence that was obtained illegally or didn't match the warrant?
Yes, that's the remedy. Evidence
So you can show if they tried to offer, again, the 10 shotguns, that's not going to come in, is it?
It probably would not, and if it doesn't, then there's no prejudice.
Okay.
Counsel, the fact that these particular shell casings were found at the scene, does that automatically equate that that is the shell, or the type of shell that killed the victim?
Well,
until you get the autopsy report back, you really don't know what type of caliber bullet actually did the... I mean, you could have someone else in there with a handgun, couldn't you?
True. Well, I mean, especially if, say, on the video surveillance, I mean, maybe you're just finding two different cases, but you have no idea. And so, I mean, in this case, it's a little bit different because we have that surveillance video, and it's pointing out, at least with that shooting, it seems like we could limit it more to the long gun. But in the average case, you're not.
How often do you have a surveillance video?
Not very often. That's why we're free. So often comes up with the there are no further questions. Firearm, briefly addressed the jacket. I don't believe there's a particular problem there, but they found that in the state. The felon didn't argue with that brief firearm response.
What about the statements made during the telephone call and made by the defendant's girlfriend? Are those admissible simply on the basis that they provide context to the defendant's admissions against interest?
We would submit that they were properly admitted and that only this objection would report. We agree with the district court. That will be provided context rather than provided context to his statements. It's not certain. Probably for the same reason, plus the district court gave an appropriate limiting instruction saying jury for considering the proof of the story.
Was that instruction given twice during the trial?
It was, yes.
Once at the time the evidence was offered and once as in the general instructions to the jury at the close of the evidence?
Right. As far as State v. Rocha, we would submit that issue and announce that they're distinguishable in three respects. Number one, that was an adversarial setting. Not what we have here. The defendant called Diane Clark, who was his girlfriend or ex-girlfriend, at the time he initiated the call. Number two, and Rocha, the question was being done by an officer.
Well, and the officer was actually testifying to the truth of the witness's statements.
Well, it's...
Says you're lying, that's a statement that's attacking the truth of the witness's statements, and that would be hearsay.
Well, yeah, it could be.
Part of Rocha was excluded.
I don't recall part of it was there. I thought it all came in. But as I read the court's opinion, as you were saying, part of the concern there is that beyond hearsay, too, part of the problem you have is an officer's opinion that amounts to rising to the level of affecting the veracity of a witness or somebody.
Can't testify to the credibility of the witness.
Right, which is a problem. And that's, we also don't have that here. Plus, when you look at Roque and you look just at the substance of that, the context for which the state alleged they needed the officer's statements, it didn't really add that much there. I mean, for the most part, Roque said, hey, and that's not mine. Later he says, yeah, it was given as well. You don't need too much context for that. Whereas here, you look at the statements made in exchange between Clark and Baker. I mean, it's pretty lengthy and they run through a number of issues. And frankly, I think if you just had his statements or the victim say he did, Mr. Riley suggested, he said this. You understand? I mean, they got a picture of me in action? I mean, I think that the question preceding that, you know, hey, they got pictures of pictures. I mean, that adds valuable context to the discussion here that I think was missing in focus. I think it is distinguishable. I don't see anything that was proper. I have nothing further to add, Mr. Cortez. We ask you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't believe we have time for rebuttal. No time for rebuttal. The next case of the day is...